This is Audible.
Craven Manor. Written by Darcy Coates. Narrated by Will Dameron. Chapter 1. Daniel's shoe scuffed over the hallway runner and dragged up loose threads. He gave it a pitying glance as he turned the corner that led to his cousin's room. The six-story apartment block was desperate for a bit of care. The thick white paint slathered over the walls had turned yellow where it wasn't already stained from water damage, and two out of his hall's four lights were dead. Daniel doubted it had been an inviting place in its prime, but by the time he'd moved in, it had become a space for the unemployed, the dying, and those with nowhere left to turn. A house for desperate people. He flexed his shoulders. They ached from a day of scrubbing a casino's bathroom floor. It wasn't a permanent job. Most of Daniel's mornings were spent handing out applications to any business with a help wanted sign posted outside, no matter how unappealing the job seemed. When he was really tight for money, he would scout around the town's red district to see if anyone wanted to hire him for the day. He could usually get a few hours of janitorial work in a nightclub, a pub, or one of the downmarket hotels. The pay was well below minimum wage, but he wasn't in a position to bargain.
"Daniel! Daniel!"
A tiny, wrinkled woman tottered out of her room and waved to him. She dressed for the day, but seemed to have forgotten that she was still wearing her nightcap. Squinted eyes blinked from behind massive, thick glasses as she held out a china plate.
"Daniel, I baked biscuits. Try!"
Some of Daniel's weariness fell away as he met his neighbor at her door. "Thanks, Mrs. Kirshner. That's really sweet." She only came up to his waist, but seemed to swell at his words.
"I baked them especially for you, Daniel. Young boy like you needs to eat more."
Daniel took one of the plain brown biscuits she held up to him. It was hard and a little dry, but he was ravenous and chewed it quickly.
"It's good. One of your recipes?"
"Yes, yes."
The tiny woman nudged her glasses a little higher, and her smile flickered.
"Normally has cranberries, but not today."
"Oh." Daniel's heart sank. He glanced over her to see inside her apartment. Her gray cat, Alonzo, slept on the windowsill. Without curtains, the light through the window cast its glare across the sparse room. He could have sworn she'd owned more furniture when she moved in. A cup of tea sat on the floor next to her chair. The drink was black, even though he knew she preferred it with milk.
"Mrs. Kirshner, are you doing all right? I mean, are you getting by?"
"Do not worry, Daniel."
She gave his chest a pat. Her hands were tiny and bent with arthritis, but her smile didn't falter.
"We are fine. I will call my daughter, yes? She is sending money next week."
"Today's Tuesday. A week's a long time to wait. And she never calls her daughter unless things are dire." Daniel dug into his pocket for the $20 he'd earned cleaning the bathrooms. He'd planned for it to go towards dinner that night and lunch the next day, but he really wasn't that hungry, he decided. "Here. It's not much, but it should help until next week."
"Ooh."
She made a shushing noise and tried to fold his hand back around the note.
"No, no, Daniel's money."
"Really?" He laughed and tucked it into the front pocket of her cardigan before she could object any further. "It's payment for all of the biscuits you bake me. Take care, Mrs. Kirshner."
"Good boy, good boy," she crooned, shaking the plate at him. "Have more."
"Thanks." He took a second biscuit, then waved as she retreated into her home. As she shut the door, he heard her sing a lullaby to her cat. She sounded happy. Daniel chewed on the biscuit as he tilted his head back to stare at the stained ceiling a foot above his head. Down the hallway, a baby began crying. Two men were arguing on the floor below. The light at the end of the hallway, one of the two remaining working bulbs, hissed and flickered. A house for the desperate. He exhaled through his nose as he turned towards his cousin's apartment.
The biscuits would have to do for dinner. If he was lucky, he could pick up a new cash-in-hand cleaning job the following day. Or, he didn't dare hope too much, he might get a reply to one of his applications. The city was starving for jobs, and any time he walked into an interview, he had to sit alongside at least 20 other candidates, waiting for their names to be called. And he had minimal work experience, no qualifications, and no car. His bike got him around the city well enough, but employers expected him to have more reliable transportation. It was a catch-22. If he could get out of the city, he might have a better chance of finding work, but he would have nowhere to stay. He was lucky to have a roof over his head as it was. His cousin, Kyle, had invited him to stay in his apartment while he got back onto his feet. That had been 6 months ago. Two bronze numbers, 1 and 6, hung on the front of their door. It was technically apartment 616, but no one had bothered to replace the missing digit. Daniel scuffed his shoes on the mat outside while he jimmied his key in the lock. The door scraped open eventually, and Daniel nearly stepped on the white envelope lying on the linoleum floor.
"Dan, that you?"
The voice came from the living room and blended in with the explosions and automatic machine fire of Kyle's video game. Daniel bent to pick up the envelope.
"Yeah, it's me. I wasn't expecting you to be home. Boss left early, so I figured I might as well, too."
An explosion, then a disappointed mechanical chime, signaled that Kyle had lost the match. He swore loudly. The letter was thick cardstock, not the usual flimsy paper the bills came in. It didn't have an address, but Daniel's name had been written on the front in a flowing script. He turned the envelope over. No return address. The console game played a jingle as a new round began. Daniel shut the door behind himself, then drifted into the tiny kitchen as he stared at the letter. Plates and pots sticky with the residue of some rice-based meal filled the sink. Daniel turned on the taps to try to soften the glue-like substance, then lifted the envelope's unsealed flap. He never received mail, and especially not unaddressed, handwritten notes with thick cardstock. His first panicked thought was that it might be an eviction notice, but that made no sense. The apartment was in Kyle's name. Besides, their landlord wouldn't splurge on such decadent paper. He pulled the sheet out and unfolded it. The letter was short, but written in a neat, curling script. The lines were all impeccably straight, and the words small, seemingly dwarfed by the white space around them. Daniel read it twice before the message sank in.
"Mr. Daniel Kane, I would like to offer you the job of groundskeeper for Craven Manor, starting immediately. Follow Tilbrook Street until it forks at the Dead Oak. Turn right and travel on for 2 miles to reach the property. I look forward to your direct response. Bran."
Daniel turned the paper over. The reverse was blank. Is this a joke? If it is, I don't get it. He'd been desperately waiting for a job offer for months, but the letter was so bizarre that he was having trouble imagining it was serious. Who gives directions to a property rather than an address? And why hire me as a groundskeeper, of all things? It's not like I have any experience. That wasn't completely true. He'd loved to garden when he lived with his grandmother before her death. They would spend hours in her backyard on the weekends, weeding, pruning, and tending. The space had made him feel safe. There were no plants around the apartment block. At one time, a tree had been planted in the sidewalk outside, but now only its stump remained. He could sometimes go a full day without seeing any green, except for the algae in a drain or an occasional weed struggling out of a crack in the sidewalk. Being paid to work in a garden sounded like a dream. But it's not a real offer. It can't be. Someone's playing a prank. The pots were overflowing, so he turned off the tap and moved into the living room. Kyle sat on the couch, seemingly unconcerned that he'd planted himself over the stained section, and bent forward as he stared, fixated, at the TV screen.
His character ran through an abandoned warehouse, sniping any enemy infantry that popped up, and occasionally throwing grenades. Daniel cleared his throat, but Kyle didn't respond, so he rested his aching back against the wall and waited for his cousin to finish. It was hard to believe Kyle had played football in college. He'd been a popular guy back then, with bulging muscles and hair the same shade of bronze as Daniel's. He hadn't been good enough to make a career of it after school, though, and had eventually gotten a job with a construction crew. Daniel knew he worked hard, but a diet of soft drinks and greasy takeaway had ruined his figure. Fragments of chips dusted the black t-shirt that clung tightly around his midsection, and he'd started to develop fat on his cheeks and the back of his neck. He gnawed at his lower lip as he coaxed his avatar into mowing down another sniper. The game chimed to signal the end of the match. Kyle's team was the victor, and he let out a whoop as he collapsed back. "Hey," Daniel said, and held up the sheet of paper. "Did you leave me this?"
"What the hell is it?"
Kyle squinted at the page, but didn't leave his couch to get a closer look.
"Did you finally get a job?"
"No, I mean, I..."
"Because I've been meaning to talk to you about that. We're going to have to bring in a third roommate."
Kyle scratched at his stubble and threw the game controller aside.
"I know you pitch in for rent, but utilities are going up next month, and what you give me just isn't cutting it. I already talked to a friend from work. I think he's game."
"Oh." Daniel felt the familiar sinking sensation in his stomach. He slipped an inch down the wall. "But we've only got two bedrooms."
"Yeah, so he'd have to share with you. I can't risk my sleep being interrupted, you know? I need to get up early for work."
Kyle rarely left the house before 9, but Daniel bit his tongue on that topic.
"A second bed won't fit in my room. There's almost no space as it is." "Do you have a job? Can you pay me more?"
Kyle jutted out his lower lip and lifted his eyebrows.
"'Cause if not, we'll both be out on the street."
"I understand. If we need to get a third renter..."
"Well, we have to, don't we?"
Daniel rubbed his hand across the back of his neck and shrugged.
"Could we switch rooms, maybe? Yours is big enough for two beds, and you'd still have privacy in mine." "Sorry, buddy."
He picked up the game controller and began selecting options for a new match.
"You know I have too much stuff to fit in that pokey space. Hey, can you fetch me a drink from the fridge on your way past?"
Daniel obediently collected a can of soft drink, tossed it to Kyle, then slipped through the apartment's door. His heart pounded, and his palms felt sweaty. The idea of living on the street again, panhandling and digging food out of trash cans the way he had before Kyle found him, made nausea flood his mouth with a metallic flavor. He stood on the doormat, listening to the crying baby's shrieks echo along the hall. The light flickered, and every flash of light seemed to tighten the nerves inside him. He ran his thumb over the cool paper, feeling the texture and the weight. Of course it couldn't be one of Kyle's jokes. It was too nuanced and strange. His cousin preferred the flashier, louder variety, like putting firecrackers in Daniel's bed at 3 in the morning. His sheets were still singed from that one.
But who else would leave this note? Not Mrs. Kirshner. She's too sweet, and her writing isn't this neat. But I don't think anyone else in this apartment block knows my surname.
Daniel practiced folding and unfolding the note. The creases were sharp and precise. He murmured the words to himself. "Offer you the job of groundskeeper." The baby's wails finally subsided into hiccups. Daniel tucked the letter into his jeans pocket and jogged down the stairs to the foyer, where he stored his bike. It was nearing dinner time, but the sun wouldn't set for another couple of hours, so he had time to at least check whether the property existed. He lived in a home for desperate people, and desperate people couldn't be choosy.
Chapter 2. Daniel leaned forward on his bike and relished the sensation of cold air whipping his hair about his face. Whenever he got out of the city, he liked to pump the pedals as fast as he could and race over the hills and dips. If he found just the right angle, it felt like he was flying.
Surrounded by bird chatter, he turned down Tilbrook Street, following the note's instructions, and found himself in an area he wasn't familiar with. He occasionally passed farmhouses and turnoffs, but no cars disturbed the tranquility of early evening. The farther he biked, the more remote the buildings became, until he was surrounded by only thick pines and strangling vines. He followed the road's bend. A massive, long-dead oak tree stood at the end of the path. Its branches seemed to extend towards Daniel like gnarled, twisted fingers. His breathing ragged, he slowed as he neared it and stopped in its shadow. The path took a sharp curve to the left at the oak tree, as though it had hit the obstacle and been forced to go around. The note said to go right. Daniel looked, but there was no sign of any path, just dense, clumpy vegetation. It was a prank after all. He turned to search behind himself. Uneasiness made the hairs on his arms rise. It wasn't hard to imagine a crime cartel luring a desperate, friendless young adult down a remote road with the promise of a job, only to knock him unconscious with a brick and steal his kidneys. Daniel knew human organs could sell for a lot on the black market. He'd researched it on some of his more desperate nights. The dirt path was bare, and as far as he could see, nothing lurked amongst the vegetation on either side. He stepped off his bike, remaining alert, and moved closer to the tree. Kids and teens had scratched messages into the trunk. Some looked old enough to predate Daniel. None looked recent. Many used the familiar initials and plus sign enveloped in a heart, and one appeared to be a rhyme that had been broken off partway through. And one simply read Craven Manor with a tiny arrow pointing to the right. Daniel turned. There was still no path through the trees. The sun was getting lower, and now that he was no longer moving, he'd begun to feel chilled. Turn around. Go home. He imagined what the evening might hold, lying awake in bed, hungry and frustrated, while he listened to Kyle play his game. He would be bone-tired, but the aches in his muscles wouldn't let him sleep for hours. Daniel grimaced. Walking the bike at his side, he approached the path of trees and vines where the path should have forked. When he drew close enough, he saw a series of gray shapes embedded in the ground. He scraped his shoe across one to clear the dirt away and found a flat, man-made flagstone. He lifted his eyes and saw more of them leading into the woods. Some poked up at strange angles where tree roots had excised them from the ground. Others had sunk deep into the dirt and were barely visible. He suspected still others lurked out of sight, hidden by time, creating something like a path. Well, how about that? Daniel cast one final glance behind himself to make sure he wasn't about to be kidnapped. Then he lifted his bike and carried it over the oak tree's massive roots. He didn't think he was imagining that the air was growing colder. The forest had become dense enough to block out light, and drops of water clung to the plants. They splashed onto him as he brushed past, running under his collar and making him shudder. The path wove erratically. In some places, trees grew up through the stones, interrupting the path, and Daniel had to hunt around to find where it continued. He didn't like how neglected the trail was. He supposed it was possible that another road approached the manor from a different direction, and that the house's owner had simply given him a long, disused shortcut. But he felt vulnerable. The bird calls seemed distorted, and the trees dwarfed him. Their trunks were so wide that he could have wrapped his arms around them without his fingers touching. The path tended uphill. Daniel considered leaving his bike and collecting it on the way back, but the idea of losing it in the woods was enough to keep his clammy fingers gripping its handles. Vines and branches kept catching in its wheels, and the path was so rough that he had to carry it more often than not. Daniel was breathless by the time the forest opened up. The sky had entered the twilight stage when shapes began to lose their color. Already strained muscles ached from the exertion, but he couldn't repress a grin when he stumbled on a massive wrought iron gate blocking his path.
So the manor is real. Does that mean the job offer is real too?
For the first time in what felt like months, a spark of hope warmed his insides. Then he stepped closer to the gates, and trepidation returned to extinguish his hope. The massive iron structure towered over him, with rows of vicious spikes at its top. But it was also incredibly old. Vines grew through and around it, and thick chunks of rust had flaked off the structure. Eroding ground had caused one half to fall ajar, creating a small gap where he could enter through. Beyond, overgrown, tangled gardens obscured the manor. He could glimpse the dark roof, silhouetted against the fading light, a few minutes' walk away.
This has to be the right place, doesn't it? The gates look ancient, though.
Words had been inscribed in the metal bar that ran along the center of the gates. Daniel brushed the grime off to read the name, Craven Manor. He clung to the hope that he was coming from a back path. It didn't matter that the gates were neglected to the point of falling apart if no one ever visited that part of the grounds. And based on the riotous gardens, he suspected no one had been to this corner in a long time.
Strange that the instructions brought me by this route. Even if it's a shorter trip, it's nearly impossible to find.
The gap between the gates was wide enough to squeeze through, but they wouldn't be easy to get back out of. He hesitated, imagining trying to flee while being chased by vicious guard dogs, spit flying from their teeth as they bit at his ankles, and squeezed his lips together.
Desperate people can't be picky.
He rested his bike against the gate, then lifted a foot, extended it through the gap, and balanced on a rock just inside the property. He had to brace himself on the rusted metal as he eased through, doing his best not to ruin his clothes, though the grime was staining his hands black. He wouldn't have been surprised if the gate hadn't been touched in more than a century. It looked at least that old. Vines snagged his foot as he pulled it through, and he stumbled, then caught himself on a tree. Visibility diminished as night fell, and Daniel grew nervous about finding his way home. But the letter had said it wanted him to start work immediately. They were clearly desperate for a gardener. If he balked and left, the owner might think he didn't want the job and offer it to someone else. The flagstone path was clearer inside the property's bounds, but weeds choked the spaces between the stones. Plants spilled beyond their boundaries in uncontrollable tangles, fighting for space. There were nearly as many dead trees as living ones, though many had collapsed and were slowly being turned into compost by tiny insects. Daniel had to clamber over several large fallen logs as he followed the path towards the house. A deep, prolonged, melancholy cry startled Daniel. A flock of crows perched on a tree near the house, seemingly watching over the building. Two of them took flight as Daniel passed beneath them. Their massive wings made a whirring whistle as they churned the air. He watched them swoop away, the fading light catching in their silky black feathers. Then he turned towards the house, and the little spark of warm hope he'd been nurturing withered into a dead coal. Craven Manor was a massive building. Its three stories seemed to have burst out of the ground like an abomination, full of disorderly protrusions and jumbled ledges. More than two dozen black windows overlooked the entryway, which was comprised of three broad stone steps leading up to a wooden arch double door. Pillars supported an awning that could easily shelter 20 people. The stones were all old, worn down, and speckled with green and gray lichen. A tower extended from the building's side, rising above the roof's highest peak. Daniel looked behind himself, as though he might have missed the real house, but he hadn't. The building's size was daunting, and the intricate black stonework was unnerving, but worse than that was its state of disrepair. Many of the windows had cracks or holes in them. A constellation of chips marred the stone walls, which were all stained from decades of rain. The dark slate roof looked ragged where tiles had fallen. One of the large double doors stood open, but there was no light to be seen inside the building. Long dead leaves crunched under his feet as he climbed the worn steps to the front door. The house was clearly abandoned. As he stood, shivering, on the top step, Daniel wondered if he might be the first person to stand there in decades.
Who owns this? And why did they leave it in such bad neglect?
He approached the doors. One of the massive slabs of wood had been left ajar, and it seemed to invite him into the foyer. Daniel's nerves and curiosity warred with each other for a moment, but inquisitiveness won out. He clenched his hands at his side and bent forward, peeking his head through the opening. The foyer was vast. At least 20 doors lined its walls. At the room's back was a magnificent staircase to the second and third floors. Carpet ran up its center, but it looked even more threadbare than the runner in Daniel's apartment block. 4 old collapsing chairs were arranged around a fireplace built into the wall on the right, though it was clear the grate hadn't been heated in a long time. The wood in the bracket beside it was dry, waiting to be lit, but had gathered a heavy layer of dust, just like everything else in the space. Leaves and dirt had blown in through the front door and broken windows. They scattered across the foyer floor and built up in the corners like snow drifts.
"This is bad. Get out."
He stood on the threshold, one hand raised as though to rest it against the open door, but he was still reluctant to touch any part of the house.
"No one lives here. No one has for a very long time. Don't linger."
But something caught Daniel's eye before he could turn away. An envelope rested amongst the leaves and dirt a few paces away, seemingly placed with great care so as to be visible from the front door. It was identical to the envelope Daniel had received at the apartment, down to the elegantly scrawled "Daniel" across its front.
Chapter 3. "Turn away. There's something wrong with this place. Get out now, while you still can."
Daniel took a hesitant step into the building, his attention fixed on the envelope bearing his name. Its crisp white stood out clearly against the browns and blacks surrounding it.
"Whatever's happening here isn't right. Don't be a fool. Turn around."
Leaves crunched under his heel. Daniel licked at his dry lips. His heart throbbed from stress, but he couldn't ignore the envelope. It waited, deceptively innocent, 5 paces inside the building. Stepping closer to it made him feel as if he were falling into a deep, black abyss. The light had already been poor, and each step from the door let the darkness swallow him further. He reached for the paper. Unlike the floor, the furniture, and the massive chandelier above his head, the envelope wasn't coated in any dust. It, at least, was recent. Daniel picked it up. The envelope was heavier than the note in his apartment. He sent a final wary look at the door, half afraid it might slam closed and lock him in the manor, then lifted the unsealed flap to look inside. The envelope held a letter and 2 flat, circular objects. Daniel took out the note first. It consisted of 2 sheets. Like the one inviting him to Craven Manor, the first message was brief and written in a small, cursive hand.
"Mr. Kane, your duties involve keeping the crypt cleaned and maintained and repairing the garden to the best of your abilities. If you require supplies, place a note with your requests on the foyer mantelpiece. The groundskeeper's house in the back corner of the garden is available to you, should you wish to stay there. You will be paid weekly, provided your work is sufficient. Bran."
Paid weekly?
The two round shapes clinked against each other at the base of the envelope. Daniel tipped them into his palm. They were coins, but unlike any currency Daniel had seen before. They were the size of a prune and heavy. A family crest had been minted into their front. He thought they might be gold. "This is my payment?" The second sheet of paper flopped loose behind the first, and Daniel shuffled it around so that he could read it. "Rules. No strangers are allowed onto the property. Do not enter the tower. Do not leave the groundskeeper's cottage between midnight and dawn. Draw your curtains. Keep the door locked. If you hear knocking, do not answer it."
"Okay."
The word came out as something close to a whisper. Daniel very carefully folded the sheets and tucked them back into the envelope. Yeah, no, not a chance. He was desperate, not insane. The abandoned house, the letters, and the ominous rules all boiled into a whole mess of ain't touching that. He'd been reckless to follow the overgrown path to what he now suspected were the property's front gates. It had been even more irresponsible to enter an abandoned building just because he'd seen a note with his name on it. Taking the groundskeeper's position was basically asking to be put on a missing persons list. A scraping noise echoed through the building. It seemed to come from one of the upper floors and reverberated in a way that made Daniel shy back. He waited for something to appear at the top of the stairs, but the shadowed, cobweb-shrouded upper halls remained empty.
"An animal, maybe? Those crows could probably fit through the broken windows."
He was close to certain that he was alone, but his nerves were frayed, and he didn't want to stay long enough to be proven wrong. He still held the coins in his left hand. They would put some food in his stomach that night, and maybe the next few nights too. But he wasn't a thief, and he didn't want trouble. He dropped the coins back into the envelope and placed it where he'd found it, on top of the leaf-strewn marble floor. Then he backed up to the open front door, continually scanning the open foyer and upper halls until he'd passed through the exit. One huge crow remained in the tree near the house's front entry. It looked old. Its feathers had taken on a dusty gray tint, and when it shuffled, its movements were slow. But it watched Daniel like a predator watching its prey, as he jogged down the wide, curved front steps. Daniel moved into the tangled garden as the last hints of day morphed into night. He'd become disoriented and couldn't remember the way to the gate. Flagstones poked out of the earth intermittently, but they seemed to lead in different directions. He chose a path, pray he'd picked correctly, and pressed between two thorny bushes in search of an escape. The house stood at his back, seeming to watch him. There were so many windows, all black and cold. If someone really did live inside, they could be watching him, hidden in perfect darkness and surrounded by cobwebs and dust. That thought was ridiculous. No one could live in that place in its current state. But then who sent the letter? Why do they want the garden restored? The instructions had mentioned a crypt, but Daniel didn't see it as he struggled to find the way out. The structure was either hidden behind the house, or so tangled in plants that it was invisible. He kept pushing forward and stumbled into a small clearing. Marble statues encircled an empty, cracked bird bath. Layers of water stains ran down the statues, giving Daniel the impression that the stone was bleeding. The sculptures depicted women, centaurs, and minotaurs rising out of cracked pillars. Their heads were cast up towards the sky, and their jaws were open in silent screams. Daniel tried not to stare at them. He hadn't passed any sculptures on his way in. He ran his hands through his hair as he tried not to let the growing panic overwhelm him. A whirring noise made Daniel yelp and stumble into one of the statues. He clutched the stone and recoiled from a dark shape looming above him. The flock of crows passed overhead. Their wings were loud, louder than a bird had any right to be, but they were gone within seconds. Daniel sucked in a quick gasp and loosened his hold on the statue. He'd clutched at a Grecian woman pouring water out of a vase as her dress slipped down in a show of tasteful nudity. Grime had collected into the statue's ridges and stained it dark, especially around the eyes. She looked as though she were crying. As Daniel stepped away from her, his chest painfully tight and his heart throbbing, he caught sight of a tall stone fence between two trees. He followed it to the left, around more thorny bushes, and past a dry water feature. The growths were thick, and a metal seat obstructed his path. He climbed over it, heard the metal groan as it was strained, then dropped free onto the other side. The gate came into view, and relief flowed through him, warming his chilled limbs. He ran the rest of the distance to the gates, leaping over ground cover, and not even caring when a dead tree branch snagged his shirt and tore a hole in the sleeve. He reached the metal and shimmied his way through the narrow gap. His bike waited where he'd left it, and he hoisted it over his shoulder without caring about how tired his muscles were. Daniel threw a final look back at Craven Manor. The trees hid everything except its ragged, dark slate roof and part of the tower. He knew it had to be his eyes playing tricks on him, but for a second, he imagined something had moved within the tower's window.
"Hey, I'm back."
Daniel nudged open the apartment door, then spent an extra minute scraping dirt off his shoes before entering. He knew he had to look a mess. He could feel leaves in his hair, and his hands were grimy from feeling through the trees. At least his bike had made the trip unharmed.
"You won't believe what happened. Hey!"
A stranger was sitting on the living room couch beside Kyle. His long hair was tied back into a ponytail, and his shirt had sweat stains around the armpits. Both he and Kyle were playing a shooter game, but Kyle paused it as Daniel entered the room.
"Hey, man."
Kyle leaned back in his seat and grinned. He looked like he was holding back laughter. Something in his expression made Daniel feel like he was the butt of the joke.
"You took your sweet time getting home. We talked about getting a third roommate, right? Meet Fletch."
"Hey," Fletch said again, this time lifting one of his fingers from the controller as a greeting.
"Hi, wow,"
Daniel managed a laugh.
"That was quick."
Kyle used the controller to scratch an itch on his chin.
"Yeah, he's split with his girlfriend, so he'll be staying with us for a while. He's going to take your room. You're fine on the couch, aren't you?"
Daniel opened and closed his mouth several times. Everything seemed to be happening too fast. He was exhausted and hungry, and all he'd wanted to do was get home, have a shower, and crawl into bed.
"Actually, I'd really like to keep my room, if that's all right." "No space for a second bed."
Kyle shrugged in a what-can-you-do kind of way.
"And Fletch can't stay out here. The street lamp shines through the kitchen window and would keep him awake."
"Insomnia," Fletch agreed.
"Yeah, so he's gotta have the room. His shift at the fish and chip shop starts early, so he needs his sleep."
"Hang on." Daniel ran his fingers through his hair, upsetting the leaves, dirt, and a small spider nestled in it. "I thought he was one of your work friends?"
"Yeah, well, I buy lunch from him, don't I?"
Kyle slapped Fletch's shoulder, then rose and rounded the chair to encroach on Daniel's personal space.
"Point is, he's paying his way, so he gets the room."
"But I am too."
A mixture of desperation and frustration tangled in Daniel's throat, tightening his voice.
"I've never been late on a rent payment, never."
"But you don't chip into any of the other stuff. Food, beer, new games, that all costs money. So until you get off your ass and find a job, you've got to take what you can get, yeah?"
The injustice burnt. Daniel had never eaten Kyle's food, not even on days he didn't have any of his own. But he knew what his cousin meant. Fletch had money to throw at luxuries that Daniel couldn't afford. Luxuries Kyle would get to partake in. Kyle clapped the side of his face in a mock caress,
that made Daniel's blood boil. If you're real nice to Fletch, he might help you get a job at his place, washing dishes or something. They're not too fussy about who they hire for that. I have a job offer. The words were out before he could consider whether they were prudent. Groundskeeper. Good pay. Accommodation included. So... Kyle's flabby cheeks pinched up as he tried to keep a laugh inside. What? Groundskeeper? Is that even a real job? You're pulling my leg. I'm not. I have the letter. He pulled it out of his pocket and waved it at Kyle, but his cousin had already turned back to the couch with a flippant pfft. Fletch pulled a handful of chips out of a bag beside him with one hand and resumed the game with his other.
Oh, and hey, I moved your stuff out of the room, man. It's in the hallway. Sorry for the inconvenience or whatever.
Sorry for the inconvenience or whatever. The words looped through Daniel's mind as he lay awake, staring at their apartment's off-yellow ceiling. He was on the couch, as promised. It was stained with Kyle's vomit from a few months back, and wasn't long enough for him to stretch his legs out. The streetlight outside the uncurtained kitchen window glared off the wall beside him, worse than a nightlight. Sorry for the inconvenience. He rolled onto his side and clenched his hands under the pillow. He had always managed to scrounge enough for his share of rent. Rent for a room, not just a couch. He'd tried to negotiate a lower monthly payment while Fletch stayed there, but Kyle had been hardball about it. They needed the extra money to pay for utilities. Utilities and new games. Daniel glowered at the cases lined up beside the TV. Kyle had at least 24 of them, and a new one seemed to appear once or twice a month. I can't live like this. But I have nowhere else to go. Do I? His defensive words rushed back to him. I have a job offer. That was true, technically. A job offer in a creepy, abandoned house from a man he'd never met, who compensated him in gold coins. But the coins had been real. Daniel had felt their weight in his hand. If the whole event had been a prank or some twisted joke, why had they included the coins when Daniel could have stolen them and run? That meant he was either being pranked by someone wealthy, like a TV show on a mission to discover just how reckless an unemployed man could get, or the offer was genuine. Daniel actually managed a laugh, but it quickly died away. Is it possible it's a real job? No joke and no murderers waiting to harvest my organs? If their purpose was to lure me into a remote area, they'd already achieved it. Why leave the coins? Why not attack me while my guard was down? And if it really is some kind of TV show or something, I should at least get compensated at the end of it, right? The fridge rattled as it defrosted itself. Kyle's snores were audible through the thin walls, and the smell of weed drifted out from underneath the door to what had once been Daniel's room. He threw the blanket aside and got up. Daniel wove his way between the empty chip packets and beer cans to where his possessions had been haphazardly stacked in the hall, and he stuffed his spare clothes and most important keepsakes into a tatty backpack. The clock on the wall said it was 5 in the morning. The sun would be up soon to light his way to Craven Manor. Chapter 4. Mist plumed around Daniel's face with every breath. He was shivering, even though he'd taken several extra layers of clothing out of his backpack and bundled them around himself. He hiked along the rocky stone path leading to the manor's gates, carrying his bike and silently cursing himself for his stubbornness. Even if I get murdered, it's still better than being homeless again. He wiped the back of his hand across his dripping nose and tried not to focus on the memories. Always being hungry. Always being cold. Business owners telling him to move on if he tried to sit under their awning when it rained. The school children, only a few years younger than he was, who had laughed as they kicked him. And worst of all,
People ignored him. Being homeless made him invisible. People would walk past, wearing thick coats and carrying hot takeaway coffees or eating burgers. Their eyes would pass over him as though he were an unattractive part of the scenery. No one said hello or even made eye contact. And that sense of non-existence had left him with a permanent fear of being forgotten by the world. He supposed that was why he let Kyle dictate the rules so often. Kyle had recognized him on the street one afternoon and invited Daniel to share the apartment. Kyle could be stubborn, immature, and pushy, but he'd also paid attention to Daniel when no one else would. Daniel let his pace slow. As he got closer to the mansion, misgivings crowded into his thoughts again. If it was a real job, he had to think the manor's owner was somewhere between eccentric and insane. Even if Brand's intentions weren't outright malicious, the job could still be dangerous. The bike caught on a root, and he had to stop to wrestle it free. Frowning, he quickened his pace again. Even if the job was dangerous, it came with real money, and he'd been paid up front. He could take the coins to a converter the next day and make plans based on how much they were worth. Early light shone on the dew collected over the wrought iron gates. They looked even more tragic in the morning glow, especially now that he could see how magnificent they must have been. The intricate designs worked in iron whispered of old-fashioned aristocracy and decadent homes. Like the day before, he left his bike sitting against the gate and squeezed through the gap. He tried not to shiver as the cold metal chilled his fingers. He hadn't been able to see the garden in detail the night before, but the whole estate had become like the gate. The space had once been vibrant and elegant, full of carefully maintained exotic specimens, but neglect had let it become something wild and miserable. Dead branches tangled with living. Stubborn plants overpowered their weaker neighbors. Overeager roots and shoots had upended stone garden borders. Daniel pressed his palm to his forehead as he tried to imagine what would need to happen to rein the growths back in. The crows had settled in trees near the gate, and they sent up a series of mournful calls as Daniel passed under them. He kept an eye on the mansion as he wove through the garden, equal parts hopeful and afraid that its owner had come back during the night, but the windows remained cold. He followed the fence's edge, wanting to see how large the property was, and found a wooden house nestled between three ancient trees. It wasn't large, but it appeared to have a couple of rooms. Lavender and bushes he couldn't identify crowded around its front door, but the flagstone path leading up to it was clear. He circled around the structure and found a small shed attached to its side. The door hung open, and its rusted hinges shrieked when he pushed on them. The windows were too grimy to let much light in, but he saw a myriad of clay pots, metal watering cans, a wheelbarrow, shears, and a garden hoe clustered between the shelves. So this is the groundskeeper's cottage. The letter said it was mine. I guess that means it's okay to go inside. He finished the loop around the building and turned towards the mansion. From the groundskeeper's cottage, he could see the tower and several of the windows dotting the stone walls. As he watched, a crow descended to settle on the building's roof. He rubbed at the goosebumps growing over his forearms. Daniel tried to look through the small window set into the cottage's front door, but the interior was too dim for him to make out anything except vague shapes. He took a breath and pulled on the handle. The door scraped open. The gardener's cottage was significantly cleaner than the main house. A layer of dust rested across the surfaces, but it was thin, not like the intense, muffling coating of dust that filled the mansion. The layout and furniture, a kitchenette to the right, bed to the left, and fireplace straight ahead, were all simple, but looked comfortable and rot-free. The space was nowhere near as decadent as the main house, but it was still infinitely better than the tiny, grimy room he'd been living in at Kyle's.
Daniel placed his backpack beside the bed and began looking through the house. The bedside drawers and wardrobe were empty, but the kitchen cupboards were full. Daniel blinked in shock at the rows of tins and boxes. Then he began pulling them out. Cans of vegetables, biscuits, tea bags, even a loaf of bread. They were all fresh. The bread was a couple of days old and just starting to turn stale, but that was nothing Daniel would gripe about. He sent one final, nervous glance towards the open door, then tore open the bread bag and stuffed two slices into his mouth. As he chewed, he surveyed the food stocked there. It was enough to keep him well fed for at least a fortnight. Someone has been to the property recently. Maybe they were even here while I was in the mansion yesterday. But who? The man who signed my letter? Bran? And what kind of a name is Bran, anyway? A new theory occurred, and it felt like a weight lifted off Daniel's chest. Maybe someone had inherited the mansion and wanted to get it livable before moving into it. If they'd hired Daniel for the garden, they might also be employing cleaners for the main house. That still didn't explain everything, like why he'd gotten the job offer through a letter under his door, rather than a more traditional application process, but it made him feel marginally more hopeful. Daniel carefully restocked the shelves and closed the cabinet doors. Then he turned on the taps to get a drink. Nothing came out, but the pipes rattled and groaned as though a large rodent had been trapped in them. Daniel bent down to see if anything was stoppering the tap, one hand poised over the handle to turn it off again, then leapt back as dark, thick liquid spewed into the sink. He stared at the mess in shock. It was like watching a toxic spill. The ichor splashed up the sink's sides and threatened to clog the drain. But within seconds, the water from the tap turned clear. Daniel let it flow for another minute to wash the gunk down the drain, but he couldn't bring himself to drink it. Fresh wood, along with a bucket of kindling, had been stacked beside the fireplace. The cabin was dim and chilly, but Daniel didn't want to spend time lighting a fire when the sun would warm the room within a few hours. He left the cottage's door ajar as he stepped back into the garden. "This is mine." The thought was alarming, but as he looked about the tangled overgrowth surrounding him, he realized it was true. He might not own the garden, but it was his to shape and tame. Memories of working beside his grandmother resurfaced. He would dig a hole with his gloved hands, then she would place a new flower into it and hold it steady while he scraped dirt around the roots. Even when the chemotherapy took its toll on her, making it too difficult for her to kneel beside him, she would sit in the shade, giving advice and encouragement as he tended to her plants for her. His eyes itched. He rubbed the back of his hand over them and set his jaw. The mansion's gardens were nothing like his grandmother's tidy, careful arrangements, but he was starting to relish the idea of working in them. He wanted to look through his supplies, but the daylight couldn't penetrate the overcast sky, tree cover, and fogged windows of the shed. A lamp and a box of matches on it sat on the desk under the cottage's window, apparently laid out for the exact situation Daniel had encountered. He shook out a match and used it to light the lamp. Once the flame stabilized, he returned to the little shed attached to the house. The metal door was stuck, and he had to heave on it to wrench it fully open. While the cabin had been cleaned and stocked recently, the shed clearly hadn't seen attention since the mansion had been inhabited. Everything in it was coated with grime and spider webs, and the metal implements were all rusted beyond help. Their designs were antiquated, too. Daniel didn't know history well enough to nail down the exact time period, but he'd seen similar tools in movies set during the Regency era. More than 100 years. It's unbelievable that this house would be abandoned for so long. But not implausible, looking at how dirty everything is. He picked through the tools, deciding what he could salvage and what would need to be replaced. In the end, there was very little he could keep. A few of the clay pots were still uncracked, and the shovel had held up better than most of the other tools, but the rest were useless. Bran said I could ask for new tools by placing a note on the fireplace's mantelpiece. Daniel stepped out of the shed to peer at the manor. As far as he could see, none of its lights had come on. Does he drop by once a day for messages? Once a week? What if he never comes back? I guess I can buy stuff myself if the coins are worth enough. Inside the cottage, Daniel found a notepad and a pen in the desk. He pulled out the chair and was surprised by how heavy it was. He'd grown used to Kyle's house, where everything was a cheap wood or flimsy aluminum. His cottage's furniture was all made from solid timber, and he found he liked it a lot. He spent a moment with the pen hovering above the paper, wondering if he should include a message thanking Bran for offering him the job, or whether that would be weird. He decided to keep the message professional and simple, as Bran had with his. With luck, he might meet his mystery employer within a few days. Speaking to him face to face would give Daniel a better sense of what behavior was expected of him. "Bran, these tools would help with my work. Wheelbarrow, shears, saw, work gloves, shovel." He signed his name and folded the paper in half. A half dozen other tools would have been useful, but Daniel didn't want to seem greedy or demanding on the first day. He clutched the paper in one hand and the lamp in the other, then began picking his way through the choked gardens. Crows circled above him, their mournful calls ringing across the estate, as though they were waiting to descend on a corpse and scavenge its flesh. He kept his head ducked and moved as quickly as the environment would let him. He was breathless by the time he climbed the three stairs to the mansion's arched entryway. Resting a hand on one of the wooden doors, he extended the lamp inside. Its glow struggled to reach the massive foyer's corners, but it was easier to see than it had been the night before. He shifted the lantern, trying to dispel the shadows lingering around the fireplace, and two orange eyes stared back at him. Chapter 5. Daniel gasped and staggered away from the door. His back hit one of the pillars supporting the overhang. He clung to it for a moment, his mind fighting his impulses, then took a cautious step forward. The eyes had been low, near the marble floor, in the space between the chairs clustered around the fireplace. Daniel leaned through the door's opening, breath suspended, and held the lamp farther ahead of himself. The eyes were gone, and the space where he'd seen them was empty.
"Hello?"
His voice echoed through the building, bouncing back from a dozen different angles. He licked his lips as he waited for a response, then took another step into the house.
"I'm sorry, I didn't mean to intrude."
A flicker of motion startled him. A liquid shadow moved along the wall beside the fireplace. Then the shape resolved itself into a small black cat. Blinking orange eyes, it stared at him. Daniel released a shaky laugh as the tension seeped from his muscles.
"Hey there, little guy. You startled me. I guess I probably scared you too, huh?"
He crouched and placed the lamp beside him, then extended one arm to see if he could coax the cat forward. It wasn't hissing or bristling its tail, which was a good sign, but it also seemed wholly indifferent to his invitation. It sat pin straight, tail wrapped around its feet, and stared at the wall behind Daniel.
"Shh, shh, I'm a friend."
He kept his voice sing-song as he crept closer.
"I just want to say hello, little cat. Don't be afraid."
He got close enough that a few more steps would let him touch the creature, but it stood and sauntered away. Its tail was down and its ears swiveled slightly in his direction, but it didn't run for shelter. Instead, it stopped near the staircase and resumed its earlier pose, tail wrapped around its feet protectively. Daniel's heart lurched. When the creature walked, he could see just how thin it was. bones jutted out in sharp angles, and its ribs were clearly visible under the skin. No one was feeding the cat, and it wasn't catching enough prey to sustain itself. The thought made him sick. "Just wait here a moment, little guy."